I'm still pretty excited about our trip to Germany this year. It was a unique trip. It was a little different from the previous trips that we have made. One of the things that made it unique and beautiful was exactly the celebration of our 10th anniversary. 10 years ago, the pilgrimage, the journey, the partnership between the church has begun through the leadership and the lives of men and women through multiple churches, actually, not just First Baptist Pfarr in Detmold North. But I was able to convey the gospel, to preach, to speak to people and families in Germany. And this is my fifth trip to Germany with baseball camp. And to go back in memory lane again this year was a little different. The experience was a little different also. I don't have the time to go into the details of the uniqueness of the trip, but we went through multiple adventures and beautiful experiences, beautiful encounters, new faces, new families. And obviously we took this opportunity to utilize the sport of baseball to convey the gospel of Jesus, and that always makes it the win for us. But one of the things that allows us to, again, just look in retrospect over the last 10 years is that there is no better way to really recognize the goodness of God throughout 10 years. When you put the frame work, when you put the context of 10 years, in this beautiful scenario of such an old communities such as the country of Germany. Actually, the church of Detmold North, where the church meets, it's a complex, it's a building that today is a school, actually, but it used to be the facilities where some of the British military forces occupied back a couple of decades ago. And you can see, you can smell, you can experience the landmarks of history throughout this beautiful nation of Germany. One of the things about history for me personally that I have become, I will say probably within the last 10, 15 years, a lover of history. I love the scriptures. I love the Old Testament. And history is an amazing teacher. It's an amazing way of learning. And actually, when I say teacher, I'm moving more into the understanding of teacher as in the ability to create newness in the future and create beautiful things. And one of the things that I was reminded through the entire experience in Germany was exactly that component of the historicity of the scriptures, the historicity of the gospel throughout generations, throughout countries and languages and translations. And obviously last year, when I was in Germany as well, we celebrated the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. So there's so many ways that you can look at how history shapes our lives and our mindset. But the one thing that I want to just focus for a few minutes, because I've been reading the book of Isaiah, and Isaiah, obviously being in the Old Testament, it is a historical book. It is prophecy. It is a lot of commands, a lot of admonition, a lot of blessings, a lot of promises. So you get a mixture of views and experiences in the context of a historical event, a historical book. And when I think about where we are today, when I think about what the need is among our people, it has to be definitely the purity and the centrality of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Now, I'm bringing this conversation today because, unfortunately, we live in a time and age where this is exactly one of the main problems, that we are not focusing on that centrality of the gospel that has been historically the cornerstone of everything that we have done and everything that the church has done throughout generations. And when you go to Isaiah, specifically in chapter 16, and you read through the early verses on the chapter, you get to chapter 4, and you get this beautiful both in unresolved tension, parallelism of the dichotomy again of this holistic view of the presence of God in the midst of chaos. So again, the context of this passage is just basically that the people of God are predicting, they are prophesizing, they're looking into the future where they're going to be taken into captivity. And as most people react, and you and I probably are no different to that, we typically see life through the lenses of entitlement. We typically see life through maybe some sense of meism and egocentric mindset that is reflected on how we typically look at God's blessing as something that we deserve, something that should be given to us. And therefore, when these prophecies are given in this historical context, what we see is that Isaiah is speaking of how the oppressor, this is verse 4 of chapter 16, the oppressor will come to an end and destruction will cease and the aggressor will vanish from the land. So Isaiah has given us this understanding that as real and as tangible, and within the next few decades, we're going to see the Babylonians, the Chaldeans take over this very same audience, this very same people. Isaiah is going to remind them that as real as evil is, and as tangible as suffering is going to be, evil always serves the purposes of God. We are not obviously promoting that God is the creator of evil, but that evil will be a tangible example exactly of what these people refuse to be and do, which is serve God. So in this case, Isaiah reminds him that the oppressor will come to an end because since evil serves the purposes of God and tragedy is real, that tragedy, that destruction, verse 4, is described as something that is going to cease to exist. And that implies also that the aggressor will vanish from the land. Now, the beauty of this message is that we see the contrast on verse 5 that historically is taking us into what is to take place after the oppressor comes to an end, after destruction ceases to exist, and after the aggressor vanishes from the land. What is going to come in replace of that is not just simply the absence of tragedy and destruction and aggression and aggressor and oppressor, but now verse 5 gives this beautiful, beautiful contrast that says, in love, a throne will be established, implying that the previous kingdoms and the previous thrones were established probably in the opposite of love, in the context of self-interest, in the context of entitlement. So now we're moving into this love-driven kingdom and mindset that is will be established. It is in faithfulness, verse 5 says, that a man will sit on that love, on that throne that will be established in love. And just to be more specific, because this is extremely important for the people of God, that it won from the house of David. So it's not just anybody that will sit on that throne in love. It's not just anybody that will be able to remain faithful, which, by the way, is a reminder that the people of God, why they had an oppressor and why they experienced destruction and why they had the influence or will have the influence of an aggressor is exactly because of the lack of faithfulness, because they were unfaithful to God. So this one individual that will sit on the throne, which is a throne in love, is exactly the one that will establish this throne with the ability to remain faithful. And then he closes the verse by saying, one who in judging, he seeks justice. Again, just contextualize this with verse 4, because apparently the previous judgment of the previous kings or the previous kingdoms wasn't for justice, was for injustice. And this is the one, says at the end of verse 5, and speaks the cause of righteousness. And this is a huge statement in the context of tragedy, in the context of problems, because for once, again, going back to where we are today in the celebration of 10 years of our partnership with this sister church and these beautiful families in Germany, and the things that we have seen God do in the midst of it, of our relationship, we must remind ourselves that the reason why we are in this place 2,000 years later, the reason why we go through this beautiful, again, beautiful relationships and beautiful friendships and beautiful families, and we are able to actually be hosted by them and stay in their homes in the intimacy of sharing and breaking bread together and praying together and crying together and just growing into our relationships. It's exactly because of the individual that has been prophesied that will establish a throne that is known by love. And this love is reflected in faithfulness. This love is reflected through the character of this individual from the house of David. This is the one that is sitting on the throne that will judge for the sake of justice. And again, we look at this context, we look at this beautiful conversation, and this is the conversation where we have to be reminded that God is a God of justice. He is a God of wrath. He is a God that will not be mocked and that he will not tolerate. Whether it is injustice or whether it is unfaithfulness, whether it is the lack of love or apathy, this is the God that will not allow anyone to be seated on the throne except the one that he chose from the house of David because of his relationship with his beloved king by the name of David. And also, this is the God that will be driven by justice that takes you into righteousness. Now, this whole narrative and this beautiful prophecy, this beautiful narrative by Isaiah, it just draws me into this conclusion that I just want to leave our minds with or thoughts as we move into the remainder of this week. Some of the most confusing statements that I have seen read in the internet, over social media, conversations, casual conversations and things like that, is this concept of the unconditional love of God, that God loves unconditionally. And I know what people imply. I know what people mean by some of these things. And again, just reading about this prophecy or this promise of this one person, that this faithful man, this one that is going to judge for seeking justice and is going to speed the cause of righteousness. It's pretty obvious that this describes this unconditional love of God, that based on his very own character and nature, he chose to do these things, not because of the faithfulness of his people, but in spite of the faithfulness, of the lack of faithfulness from his people. I understand that component. But at the same time, we live in a time and age that conveniently we take some of these phrases and we make them and we readjust them to justify exactly the lack of love, exactly the lack of faithfulness, exactly the lack of justice. And obviously, we are a generation that have no problem whatsoever with unrighteousness. So my conclusion, my closing thoughts over this understanding of the faithfulness of God, of the unconditional love of God, is number one, that this unconditional love of God, which is true, it does exist, does not translate as unconditional relationship with God. How do I know that? Because of verse 4. Because eventually these people, because they misused, they abused, they broke, they violated the relationship of righteousness and justice and faithfulness with God, they experience, based on verse 4, will experience an oppressor, will experience destruction, will experience aggressor. So here's what I want us to think for just a few minutes over this time as we pray together, is if or as we face oppressors, since or as we might be facing some destruction, verse 4, and since or as we might be facing aggressors in our lives, number one is that they are, again, they are ministers of God, they are limited, they are controlled by God, God is in control over every situation. And secondly, for those who are under the kingdom or the throne that has been established, for those who have known the faithful one, for those who belong to the house of David, for those who now are driven by justice and rejoice in righteousness, we believe that when we are confronted with oppression, destruction, and aggressiveness, those three, you know, components listed on verse 4, they do exist in the life of people for the purpose to build the character of Jesus in our lives. I am not implying, I am not asking, I'm not seeking for people to be oppressed, to be among destruction, or to face an aggressor. All that I'm saying is that when we do face them, is for the purpose to develop the throne that is built in love. It's for us to be found faithful because of the reliability and the trustworthiness of Jesus in our lives. We are here to be reminded that through Jesus Christ, God didn't simply give us a king or a prophet or a priest. He gave us a family member. So when he says from the house of David, he's describing this concept of family. See, this whole concept of oppression, destruction, and aggression, it has to do so we can love justice and seek righteousness. Because at the end of the day, that's the purpose for God in the life of his church.